Today is Tuesday, October 13th, and this is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, the latest from the conflict in Nagorno-Karabakh.
We're hearing reports that parts of it have been taken by Azerbaijan, and you can see some celebrations online of people saying that this has been a victory already. But on the Armenia side, the Armenia Minister of Defense says that they have not taken any of this land.
Also ahead, a major American coronavirus vaccine trial is put on hold. Plus, flooding in East Africa. These stories and more are next. Our top story today is the conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan in the disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh. After a failed ceasefire over the weekend, Azerbaijan said Tuesday its forces captured a key town in the enclave. Armenia denies that happened. Nagorno-Karabakh is internationally recognized as part of Azerbaijan, but its population is majority ethnic Armenian. Armenia's military and government support the separatist movement in Nagorno-Karabakh. The fighting is the worst outbreak of hostilities in the disputed area in decades, with hundreds dead so far. For the latest, I spoke to VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch, who is in the Armenian capital.
The city of Hadrut is a key city that lies between the front lines of Azerbaijan and the Armenia side, which is not technically Armenia. It is a breakaway province called Nagorno-Karabakh, which claims to be its own country, and it is within Azerbaijani borders, according to international lines. This city is one of the larger areas that is so deep inside the conflict. I wasn't that far from there the other day, and you could hear bombs there and in surrounding towns. What's happening right now is we're hearing reports that parts of it have been taken by Azerbaijan, and you can see some celebrations online of people saying that this has been a victory already. But on the Armenia side, the Armenia Minister of Defense says that they have not taken any of this land. And this is sort of par for the course of this conflict, with both sides reporting their own point of view with very little outside confirmation on the actual front lines. There is not a lot of outside observation on the front lines at all.
And along those lines of it being difficult to tell what exactly is going on, there's a lot of reports of mercenaries, foreign mercenaries, being brought in to fight in Nagorno-Karabakh. What do we know about this?
Well, Armenia has accused Azerbaijan multiple times of bringing in mercenaries from Syria, from Afghanistan, perhaps from other countries, to fight the war for them. I can't confirm that this is true. Even if it's completely untrue, it still does change the dynamic of the war, because Armenia is a Christian country. Azerbaijan is a Muslim country, and Christians in Armenia are afraid of jihadis attacking their country. And the government or the military forces play it as these mercenaries are jihadis. In fact, those are the exact words they use. Syrian jihadis are fighting for Azerbaijan. And it heightens the fear on the Armenian side from the local population.
But to be clear, you haven't seen real hard evidence of these mercenaries being present.
No, what I've seen is reports and accusations, and then they get repeated by high-level officials. And then they seem to be more legitimate because they came out of the mouth of somebody not only high level, but maybe somebody foreign. And then it seems to circle around that the reports become more legitimate without actual hard evidence.
A bit more on the international aspect. Turkey has aligned itself with Azerbaijan. Russia is in the neighborhood and tried to broker a ceasefire last week. What's the latest with the international involvement in this conflict?
Well, it seems that in the recent days, all countries that are involved have become vocal and alarmed by this continuing conflict, because over the weekend, there was supposed to be a ceasefire for the exchange of prisoners and bodies, and it never happened. This one was brokered by Russia. One thing that's interesting is that Turkey has said it will help or is helping. Russia says it will stand by its allies, but hasn't actually, as far as we know, isn't doing anything on the ground. And the Armenians say that they don't want Russia involved on the ground because they don't need it. They say they're strong enough without Russia. If both countries got involved directly in terms of the future of the region, it could be a disaster, because Turkey and Russia are already fighting each other in Syria and Libya, and to take another conflict, one that's also so close to their own countries, and having them pitted against each other here could certainly destabilize the region very quickly.
That was VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch speaking to me earlier today from the Armenian capital. Reuters sources say the White House is moving forward with three sales of advanced weaponry to Taiwan, sending in notification of the deals to Congress for approval. China has threatened retaliation if the deal goes through. Adam Reed of Reuters reports.
The United States risks angering China by moving forward with three sales of advanced weaponry to Taiwan. Notifications of the deals have gone to the U.S. Congress for approval in recent days, according to five sources familiar with the situation speaking on Monday. The move was threatened with retaliation by China, which considers Taiwan a wayward province that it wishes to reunite with the mainland. Reuters broke the news in September that as many as seven major weapon systems were making their way through the U.S. export process as the Trump administration attempts to ramp up pressure on China. A spokesman for the Chinese Foreign Ministry said that U.S. arms sales to Taiwan severely damaged China's sovereignty and security interests. Zhao Lijian told reporters, quote, China will make a legitimate and necessary response according to how the situation develops. He did not elaborate on what their response would be, but told Washington to immediately cancel the deal. A truck-based rocket launcher, long-range air-to-ground missiles, and sophisticated imagery devices are believed to be the advanced items being sold to Taiwan by the U.S. Taiwan's Washington office and its defense ministry did not offer comment when asked by Reuters. But Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Joanne Wu said the government had not been formally notified of any new arms sales.
That was Adam Reed of Reuters. The anti-corruption organization Transparency International is out with a new report on how governments enforce rules to keep exporters from paying bribes in foreign markets. Charles Deledesma from the Associated Press has more.
Transparency International finds only four of 47 countries, the US, Britain, Switzerland, and Israel, as actively enforcing legislation against foreign bribery in 2019. Lead author Gillian Dell says the research shows many countries are barely probing such bribery, and that it's all too common for businesses in wealthy countries to export corruption to poorer nations, undermining institutions and development. China, the world's largest exporter, was found to conduct little or no enforcement. I'm Charles Deledesma.
In the United States, the Senate hearing on Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett is in its second day. Under sharp questioning, Barrett has declined to say whether she thinks the 1973 Supreme Court decision that established the right to abortion should be struck down. Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein of California pressed for an answer on the ruling, known as Roe v. Wade.
On something that is really a major cause with major effect on over half of the population of this country, who are women, after all, it's distressing not to get a straight answer. So let me try again. Do you agree with Justice Scalia's view that Roe was wrongly decided?
Senator, I completely understand why you are asking the question. But again, I can't pre-commit or say, yes, I'm going in with some agenda, because I'm not. I don't have any agenda. I have no agenda to try to overrule Casey. I have an agenda to stick to the rule of law and decide cases as they come.
President Donald Trump last month nominated the conservative Barrett, currently an appellate court judge, to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Democrats and reproductive rights activists are concerned that Barrett's nearly certain confirmation will lead to the court overturning its previous ruling on abortion. The Senate judiciary hearing on Barrett's nomination is expected to run 4 days. This is VOA. Five men accused of plotting to kidnap the governor of the U.S. state of Michigan appear in federal court Tuesday. The AP reports that the hearing is on whether they should be detained before trial. The FBI made the arrests last week after using confidential sources, undercover agents, and clandestine recordings to foil the alleged conspiracy to kidnap Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Some defendants had conducted coordinated surveillance of the Democratic governor's vacation home in northern Michigan in August and September, according to a criminal complaint. The men were trying to retaliate against Whitmer due to lockdowns she ordered to control the spread of COVID-19, authorities said. They said four of the men had planned to meet last week to pay for explosives and exchange tactical gear. Whitmer has been widely praised for her response to the virus outbreak, but was also sharply criticized by Republican lawmakers and people in conservative areas of the state. The Capitol has been the site of many rallies, including ones with gun-toting protesters calling for her ouster. The defendants face up to life in prison if convicted. Seven others linked to a paramilitary group called the Wolverine Watchmen were charged in state court for allegedly seeking to storm the Michigan Capitol and provide material support for terrorist acts by seeking a, quote, civil war, end quote. You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. The World Health Organization said European nations reported more than 700,000 new coronavirus cases last week, the highest ever figure since the start of the pandemic. In a weekly briefing published Tuesday, WHO said weekly virus cases and deaths across Europe jumped by 34% and 16% respectively. Britain, France, Russia, and Spain accounted for more than half of the new cases seen in the region. WHO noted that the number of new cases reported in Spain showed a, quote, noticeable decline, end quote, in comparison to recent weeks. But in Poland, WHO said virus cases and deaths spiked by 93% and 104% respectively, and the government has tightened restrictions to try avoiding another lockdown. Reuters reports Poland's prime minister said he went into quarantine after coming in contact with someone who tested positive for the virus. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said this week that the agency understood the frustration people were feeling as the pandemic drags on, but warns, quote, there are no shortcuts and no silver bullets, end quote. WHO described lockdowns as a, quote, last resort, end quote, when countries have no other options. The World Health Body urged officials to use more targeted methods to stop the virus. Pharmaceutical company Johnson & Johnson said on Monday it had temporarily paused its COVID-19 vaccine candidate's clinical trials due to an unexplained illness in a study participant, delaying one of the highest-profile efforts to contain the global pandemic. Gloria So of Reuters reports.
Johnson & Johnson announced Monday it's temporarily paused trials for a COVID-19 vaccine after a participant in the study fell ill for unknown reasons. The news delays one of the highest-profile efforts to contain the global pandemic, and it's another major setback for the COVID-19 vaccine race after AstraZeneca paused late-stage trials of its vaccine candidate last month, also due to unexplained illness in a trial participant. Johnson & Johnson said in a statement that their participant's illness is being reviewed and evaluated by an independent monitoring board, as well as the company's clinical and safety physicians. The company said that the current study pause in giving doses of the vaccine was different from a regulatory hold required by health authorities. It added that such pauses are normal in big trials, which can include tens of thousands of people. J&J had kicked off its final 60,000-person trial just last month, the results of which were expected by the end of this year or early 2021. Johnson & Johnson declined to elaborate on the participants' illness due to privacy concerns, but the company says that some participants in studies get placebos, and it can be unclear whether a person suffering a serious illness in a clinical trial received a placebo or the treatment.
That was Gloria So of Reuters. Authorities in the eastern Chinese port city of Qingdao said they have completed coronavirus tests on more than 3 million people following the country's first reported local outbreak in nearly 2 months. The city's health department says no new cases have been found among the more than 1.1 million test results returned thus far. The city says it had a total of 12 cases, 6 confirmed and 6 asymptomatic, since the new outbreak was spotted over the weekend at a hospital. The National Health Commission, however, says at least 6 new virus cases were found in Qingdao in the past 24 hours. The reason for the discrepancy was not immediately clear. In recent months, unpredictable intense floods have washed across parts of East Africa, ruining homes and livelihoods as people and governments try to battle a global pandemic. VOA's Anita Powell spoke to those affected in Uganda and brings us this report from Johannesburg.
As the world battles a pandemic, large swaths of the African continent have been, literally, submerged by floods. Since March, this crisis has left more than 400 people dead in East Africa. A separate round of flooding has hit West Africa's Sahel region. In Uganda, Catholic Relief Services estimates that as many as 580,000 people are affected. Country Director Nick Dehoy.
It's kind of affecting all kinds of people. You know, in Kampala, our capital city, it affects people who have nice houses on the lake shore. But if you are in the Mount Elgon area on the border with Kenya, or you're in the Kasese area on the border with the DR Congo, and you're a smallholder farmer who normally benefits from farming on a riverbank, and suddenly there's this raging flash flood that comes down the hills and mountains because of this very intense rainfall, you lose everything. You lose your house, you lose your land. And so it's a very diverse group of people that is affected.
In the eastern town of Jinja, along the shores of Lake Victoria, radio host and environmental activist John Hillary says flooding doesn't just destroy homes, it ruins the very fabric that holds society together.
The public hospital, the only public hospital in the Chilembe region, completely destroyed. So people, as a result of the floods, got sick, but they could not get anywhere else to go to because the hospital had been destroyed.
Dehoy says heavy rainfall is normal in East Africa. What isn't, he says, is the frequency and intensity. And he says the pandemic makes it harder for groups like his to respond.
It's like a triple crisis in Uganda, right? We have the locusts, we have all the floods, and then on top of everything else, we have COVID-19. And so it's been, for the affected people, it's been an especially hard year to be on a lockdown and be affected by floods. And then because of the lockdown, accessing the support and the relief that they are entitled to.
Hillary, who speaks often about climate change on his radio show, says that to him and other activists, this is personal.
My mom is a gardener, my grandparents, and many people in my family are farmers. That's what I've known. Growing up, I always went with my mom to the garden to dig, and we ate food from the gardens. Over time, we have noticed that because of what I think is negligence, we've been involved in practices that have completely destroyed our rain cycle. Our climate is deteriorating every other day. I'm only 26. I have seen over time my world deteriorating. I don't want to see the same for my children.
This, he says, is a living nightmare. This is his home, and he wants future generations to see its beauty too. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's it for our show today. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
More than 1 million Uyghur Muslims and members of other ethnic and religious minority groups forced into internment camps. Catholic clergy imprisoned. Tibetan Buddhists arrested. The Bible and Korans rewritten. Protestant churches demolished. These human rights abuses and many others have occurred as the People's Republic of China strives to sinicize all religions and beliefs and ensure absolute submission to the Chinese Communist Party's authoritarian control and ideology. At a recent symposium in Rome hosted by the U.S. Embassy to the Holy See, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said that nowhere in the world is religious freedom more fiercely under assault than in China.
That's because, as with all communist regimes, the Chinese Communist Party deems itself the ultimate moral authority. An increasingly repressive CCP, frightened by its own lack of democratic legitimacy, works day and night to snuff out the lamp of freedom, especially religious freedom, on a horrifying scale.
Secretary Pompeo spoke as the Vatican and Beijing are negotiating an extension of a controversial 2-year agreement on the appointment of Catholic bishops in China. Secretary Pompeo pointed to the Church's power of moral witness and cited its role in inspiring those in Central and Eastern Europe who freed themselves from communism in the late 20th century, as well as its challenge to Latin American authoritarianism that helped bring about democratic transitions.
And in my own country, movements to end slavery in the 19th century and expand civil rights for African Americans in the 20th century were largely led by Christians of many denominations, who appealed to our nation's Judeo-Christian heritage, as well to our core founding principles.
Secretary Pompeo urged leaders of all faiths to speak out against the Chinese Communist Party's attempt to eradicate religious freedom and bend all religious communities to the will of its totalitarian program. In China, the very future of religious freedom, said Secretary Pompeo, depends upon these acts of moral witness.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Issues in the News moderator Michael Williams and a panel of prominent Washington journalists as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week, including both U.S. President Donald Trump and his Democratic Party opponent, former Vice President Joe Biden, hit the campaign trail as Election Day draws nearer. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you the biggest stories of the day. Our global correspondents report the news objectively and comprehensively, keeping you informed about important world events. International Edition provides analysis from the most seasoned experts around the world to put the day's events into context to better understand what's happening and how it may affect you. Listen to International Edition Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 Universal Time on the Voice of America or your local affiliate. You can also listen to the show on demand by visiting the program page at voanews.com or by subscribing to the show wherever you get your podcasts. VOA's International Edition, your go-to source for accurate, comprehensive, and objective news.
What's going on, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi coming to you from the Voice of America studios here in Washington, D.C. Join us each week on Upfront as we discuss a range of topics. The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
Eliminate the mentality that girls cannot do what boys can do.
You basically need to go to school. There's just no way you're going to get all the skills that people want from you or they expect from you if you're not at school.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
can't AU, African Union, can't these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.